She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. This show is sponsored by Chapman Tucson, and we thank them for their support of Mrs. Green's World and of our community. They do a lot of great things out there, and we should all be most appreciative of the ways that they give back. Now I'd like to welcome our guest today. His name is Frank Sesno. Frank is the director of the George Washington School of Media and Public Affairs and the creator and host of Planet Forward. He is also an award-winning journalist, a former CNN correspondent, anchor, and Washington bureau chief. Planet Forward was founded in early 2009 and staked its claim as the first green staffing company in Illinois. It's an online public forum where experts and engaged citizens weigh in on energy, climate, and sustainability. So you know, everybody, Mrs. Green loves that. Then it takes the best ideas and features them online, on TV, and now on Mrs. Green's World. So when I spoke to Frank for 1 minute before the show, I always love it when the message is, let's do this and let's have some fun, because people can learn a lot through having fun. So thank you, Frank, for agreeing to take time out of your very busy schedule to be on Mrs. Green's World.
It is my pleasure to be with you.
It's going to be a lot of fun. As I said, Jim Beiser says hello. He'll be happy I mentioned him on the air. He's on your advisory board.
I'll do a shout-out to him.
Do a shout-out to him. He is great, really. I call him Beiser the advisor. So anyway, the little bit about your journey. I'd like to talk always about Planet Forward and what you're doing, but what in your life's journey was leading you to the starting of Planet Forward and what you're doing with a very big global intention right now?
Oh, several things. One, my experience in and frustrations with mainstream media and the difficulty in tackling complex issues and the near impossibility of having an attention span of, in mainstream media, seeing more than the conflict reported and relayed, but really taking people into both the complexity but also the excitement and the invention and the innovation, which is where I tried to create this space. So that was one thing. Another thing is I was looking for an issue set that would really resonate with young people. And there's nothing that resonates with young people more than this, because this is all about the world that they're in and the world that they're going to live in and the world they're going to run. And I have a little exercise, a little game I play with them. I call it the grandma's game. And I'll ask my students, how many of you have a grandma alive? And almost all of them put up their hands. And then I ask, how old is grandma? And they'll say 78, 88, 98, whatever.
That's
it
good.
Is.
I'm glad you didn't say 64.
I haven't found any of those yet.
That's really good.
And then I'll say, well, if you live to your grandma's age, you've got good DNA. What year is that? Well, my students now were born in about 1994. So their eyes will go wide, especially ones with the older grandparents. They'll say, my gosh, that's like 2086 or 2090. And then I'll say, okay, well, fine. You've just established that 2050 is tomorrow for you. So when you see that time referenced in reports and all this other kind of stuff, it's not forever from now. It's square in the middle of your life. And we got 9 billion people, and climate change has either happened and been cataclysmic, or maybe we've actually done something about it. And we're living in cities, we're more urbanized. How are we going to adapt to that planet, your planet? I try to make it real for them. So that was another thing, making it real. And then finally, this is not something that's going to go away. We're not going to legislate our way through it. We're not going to have treaties that make it all go away. These challenges and these issues are with us. Actually, this is the finally. The other finally part of it, and you'll relate to this, is it's not just about conflict and screaming. There are really interesting, exciting new things that are being done because humans are an incredibly inventive species. So pulling all that together, plus the magic of media, that's what's Planet Forward.
And Frank, I will tell you what, that concept that you just articulated is what helps me get up some mornings, because there are guests I interview and I go put my head under the covers and say, goodbye. Okay, it's just, I'm just going to wait, and I don't want to do that. So it's the young people.
Well, we need that, but I think that's one of the problems, and that it's been identified by others with the environmental movement generally, that it's all about doom and gloom, or we're killing off all the species, the sixth extinct. All of these things are happening, and we need to be afraid. We need to be motivated by urgency, but we need not to lose sight of the fact that, you know, we defy gravity every day because we are so brilliant as a species. Not long ago, we had things called Love Canal and the Hudson River, which was, you know, a river of death.
We
have the capacity.
Right.
So we can do this.
To change it. You know, I read one of the quotes that I loved on your website. Planet Forward engages young people and innovators in search of solutions to the biggest challenges facing our planet. Through media, teaching, and convening, we empower new voices and elevate compelling ideas. Now, that's an upper, if you ever heard one. So what are you, share with us some of the emphasis you're putting on inventions and innovations in the context of climate change and sustainability.
I started this project initially with a different concept. The concept at the time was, and it was, Planet Forward, Make Your Case. It was sort of an op-ed page or an op-ed exercise,
right.
Interactive exercise in the area of environment, sustainability, climate, energy. And I went through a very interesting year. We got some great stuff. But after I stood back and looked at it, I felt, you know, this is great, and citizens are participating, and I like that. But at the end of the day, they're arguing about the same things. Is coal bad? Is coal good? Is mountaintop mining? Should it be wind farms instead? All that kind of stuff. So that's when I thought, what if we just leapfrog all the debate and look at what is actually being done, what's actually being invented, what's actually new and different? And so that's when we developed this focus around innovation. So we've got ideas from, we had an award-winning team, a bunch of undergraduates from University of Arkansas that posted a video on turning algae into butanol, a fuel, developing a very cheap pump that could be sold to farms, water treatment plants, to create a fuel from algae right on the premises and run tractors or cars or whatever they want to do. We had a really wild piece about a business that's putting in tidal turbines in the East River in New York, and those are replicable in other parts of the world, and they swivel with as the tide changes, and they turn and they produce power underwater.
Oh my gosh, kidding me! Yeah, like little turbines that they put in the water.
Yeah, turbines. Think of a windmill underwater. And now it's the tides that are making those turn and powering. And so the objective here was to power on Roosevelt Island in New York, to power a grocery store and about 125 residences, I think it was, from this prototype. There's a guy who did this fascinating thing in California in the desert where they're trying to capture, to store electricity from solar and wind power so that when the wind doesn't blow and the sun doesn't shine, we can still have power from the surplus that's generated when the sun does shine and the wind does blow. So what did they do? They created a gravity-driven rail car. So when the sun is shining, the car is driven via solar power and wind power up the tracks, 5 miles up the track. Inside the rail car is a turbine. So when the sun doesn't shine, guess what they can do? They can roll it downhill. They can let gravity take its course. It comes downhill, and it generates power as it rolls.
I mean, seriously, you have to wake up every day and say, I'm glad I'm Frank Says No, because you're getting a lot of good news. I got to say, it's wonderful news. And what about that kid that this is, absolutely, I got so many emails from the 19-year-old, the boy in flat, who is cleaning up, came up with a feasibility study for cleaning up and getting the oceans free of plastic in 10 years. I mean, I have read and read and read and researched about that. So that's the kind of hope and innovation that you're looking for in some very crucial areas, the ocean.
Well, and it comes from young people.
Yep.
I went up to Syracuse or around Syracuse. Was it Syracuse or Rochester? I don't remember now because it was a couple of years ago. But I visited this young man, 24 years old. He'd gotten out of Rensselaer Polytech, I believe it is. And he was growing mushrooms and then getting seed husks and having them grow together and then baking them and essentially creating a mushroom-based packing material to replace styrofoam.
Oh, my gosh. I heard about that.
Yeah, his name is Eben Baer. And, you know, so you think about every time you buy something, you know, a piece of electronic or something, and you open the bag and or the box and you take out the styrofoam, that stuff is around for a long time.
And it's mushrooms you can plant.
Well, the other thing you can do is you can throw them out on the compost, and over time,
right,
with rain, they biodegrade.
That was a pretty exciting, and that was not a show guest. That was a forum I attended. So that's always, those things are great, great to hold on to. I guess one of the things that comes up for me that wasn't on the list of questions to ask Frank is, how are you finding these ideas? I know that you work with, Second Nature, who Tony is fabulous, but how are you out there, I don't want to say trolling because that has become a bad word, but how are you reaching out and connecting these great minds with great ideas to plant it forward so that you can share them?
We're trolling.
Trolling? In the old-fashioned way, where it didn't hurt anybody.
Nothing wrong with trolling. No, well, we're doing some trolling, but we have just established a consortium of a dozen schools across the country, and we are working with the young people in the schools, for example, to generate ideas and content, and then we are telling them the payoff for that will be to be prominently featured on Planet Forward. And we also convene live discussions and events. Last year we held a summit. We had the president of CARE, the president of the World Food Program, the CEO of Land O'Lakes. We had senior executives from Monsanto. We had activist groups. We had all kinds of people. It was amazing. And we had students from 10 different schools. And we're saying to them, these ideas, this is your incentive, these ideas that you post to Planet Forward can go to your communities via your social network, ours, through our media partners. We had media partner Bloomberg Television last year, and we're going to have a new media partner this year, which I'm very excited about. Can't quite announce yet, but that'll be very soon. And then we will put these ideas to some of these decision makers at our events. So part of the way we get put the word out is through these dozen schools to start with. And the payoff, the promise is that your idea can be put before a decision maker, can be put to a larger audience. We're also putting the word out to entrepreneurs and to small businesses and to others, because this is open to lots and lots of people. It's not just about students. It's about anybody who has done, researched, implemented, experienced, or observed something that's innovative that they think could move the planet forward. We want to spread those stories because they can be both informative and inspirational.
And I'm sure you're looking for a media partner that has an international radio show that can get the word out, too.
I am, and there's this thing called Mrs. Green.
Mrs. Green's World.
I've been meaning to talk to Mrs. Green. I don't know where she is. I can't find
Mrs.
her.
Mrs. Green will be talking to your office, believe me, because ever since I heard about this, it's like I'm so going to be at the next summit and participate and do some shows on it. We did a series on food. What am I eating and why should I care? So it's really near and dear to me. And I'm kidding, but I will be someone will be in touch, my show producer.
I love it. And our next focus is very, very important because it's really going to be very specifically focused on how climate change is going to affect our food.
Which is really a perfect segue. Do you have some more ideas you'd like to talk about in terms of the innovation for climate change and sustainability? Because I'd love to go into the food area. How are
Let's
we going to feed the planet?
Food is always a good idea.
I mean, it always is. We all need it. We all eat it. And we have food scarcity, food security. We have record-breaking droughts. I had Gary Nabhan on the show a couple of months ago, and he said, Gina, there are 2,300 counties in the United States with droughts, severe droughts right now. And then he said, you know, drop the bomb, because I'm based in Tucson. He said they're going to lower the water supply to big ag in Arizona by 50% in the next 2 years. Maybe some of the people in Arizona will wake up then. It's like,
yes,
I've got a little bit of hope.
So you know, it's not just Arizona. I was at an event not too long ago, and I was talking to a farmer from Montana.
Mm-hmm.
And his aquifers have dropped 50 feet, I think he said,
oh my
in 10
God.
Years.
That's really a scary number.
And he grows barley for our beer, so that would really be a terrible thing.
When it starts hitting people in the beer in their beers, it's just like that's one of my frustrations. Is I do think at times people in America walk around in a coma because there is so much abundance, and it's not hitting them hard enough yet, most of them.
So that's the problem. That's the challenge. The challenge we face with this issue is how do we make it real without sounding alarmist?
Right. Right.
How do we make it immediate? Because this is something that's going to, it's like the frog in the, you know, in the water that's slowly turned up, right? How do we connect a very urgent, very real thing that a lot of people actually don't accept? So there's this kind of fake controversy around a lot of it, in my opinion. But this is happening. It's happening, and it's happening now.
And I remember the first presentation that I went to. It was Diana Liverman, who's the head of the Institute of the Environment out here, and she tied the issue of food scarcity to food security, which is something, like people say, what's food security? If you live in the United States, not a big concept that we're talking about pretty much, but it's something we should be. So do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, I think food, you know, we have, you know, one child in five in this country is identified as being food insecure, and we have to define that term. Food insecure could mean they're hungry. It could also mean they're living so close to the line nutritionally or economically that their food that they need could be jeopardized. We certainly know the impact that poverty has and the number of children who have, you know, subsidized lunches at schools and the role that has played. We also know the role quality has played in the issues we have of obesity. So our food challenges come in many shapes and forms. Climate change complicates it further because it is quite likely. In fact, I was just doing a piece for the U.S. Department of Agriculture based on their National Climate Assessment report and what it means for food. And we were looking at the lowly soybean. Well, the soybean, and soy is a gigantic crop in this country, as you know, and it's in everything from milk to mascara, never mind tofu.
Totally.
The soybean is going to be endangered, and already has been, by some climate-related activities. Soybean rust is a disease that was blown up from from South America, probably initially in Hurricane Katrina. It's been blown further north by Hurricane Ivan. The more volatile and violent weather that is predicted as the planet warms has the potential to blow this rust further. Climate change drives drought, and soy is a very water-sensitive plant. So where things grow, how they grow, if they're stressed, the nutritional value they have, which is another issue with zinc and iron in soybean, if it's stressed and if it's not getting, you know, in higher CO2 environments. I mean, in the short term, as you know, higher CO2 is like a fertilizer. Things will grow better. But after a certain point in the projections, they start to decline in yield. So our food supply, while very abundant now, and probably for the foreseeable future, is nonetheless vulnerable to many things that are already happening with climate change. Farmers are already planting soy 12 days earlier than they used to because of climate change.
It's unbelievable. And it's like, I just want the whole last segment of this show, if it's okay with you, to talk about the lack of mainstream media coverage on climate change and any of these important issues. I look a lot at the BBC, which seems to have more news. In terms of the, I knew this was going to happen, but we have a break in about a minute and a half. One of the things I'd like to talk about and get you to weigh in on is you just made a mention of, you know, obesity and on. So the compromised food, our current food supply. I had a guest on yesterday from the American Diabetes Association because I'm doing a community series on the roles that nonprofits play. And she said to me, and I did not know this, that one in three Americans will suffer from diabetes in 2050 if it continues to increase at the rate we're going. Now tell me that that is not a food issue. It's like, what is it? It's not the air. It's not the water. And, you know, she talked about the stigma involved in that. But we have a nutritionally compromised food supply in many ways already. So can we come back and touch on that a little bit when we get back?
It will be my Pleasure might be the wrong word, but
I know.
Yes, I look.
And then I want you to tell us how we are going to feed the planet, because I know Frank says no has the answer.
Oh yeah, thanks.
Thanks. No setup there, but everybody will be right back. I'm sure you don't want to touch your dial. We are interviewing, or I am interviewing, Frank Sesno. He is the director of the George Washington School of Media and Public Affairs and the creator and host of Planet Forward. Please stay here with me. We have lots of great conversation when we come back about food scarcity, and Frank is going to tell us how we're going to feed the planet. Please stay here with me. Think blue. Think beyond green. Think TDI clean diesel technology. One part of the Volkswagen Think Blue initiative, our goal of creating and encouraging eco-conscious products and behaviors. This is Mrs. Green. A car that can drive a long way should still make you want to, well, drive a long way. Volkswagen Jetta's TDI clean diesel is a high-mileage vehicle that lets you stop at the filling station less often so you can spend more time enjoying the road. See Chapman VW today for a very special offer on the 2014 Jetta TDI.
Bookman Sports Exchange is now open at 3330 East Speedway. We're taking our passion and experience of buying, selling, and trading books and music and applying it to the world of sporting goods, outdoor, and fitness gear. We are giving you another way to save money on the things that you love, Bookman style. Remember, Bookman Sports Exchange, sporting goods, outdoor, and fitness gear, now open daily from 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. on Speedway east of Country Club. Check out bookmans.com for more info.
Ready to clean out that garage? Goodwill offers you 40 convenient locations all over southern Arizona. And at every one, you'll be greeted by a uniformed Goodwill employee trained to assist you in unloading your items, prepared to offer you a receipt for your tax-deductible donation, and grateful for something you won't get anywhere else.
Thank you. Because of your donation, I have a job.
The gift of Goodwill. For a list of Goodwill donation sites, go to goodwillsouthernaz.org.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And we are certainly getting lots to think about from our very passionate and well-informed guest today, Frank Sesno. He is the director of the George Washington School of Media and Public Affairs and the creator and host of Planet Forward. He is also an award-winning journalist, a former CNN correspondent, anchor, and Washington bureau chief. Planet Forward was founded in early 2009 and staked its claim as the first green staffing company in Illinois. It's an online public forum where experts and engaged citizens weigh in on energy, climate, and sustainability. They take the best ideas and feature them online, on TV, and now on Mrs. Green's World, and I love that. And one short shout-out, please remember that Mrs. Green's World membership program is alive and growing. We ask you to consider becoming an official supporter of Mrs. Green's World to help keep our broadcast free and independent. It's easy to become a member by visiting our website at mrsgreensworld.com. Click on the Preserve Our Planet icon in the upper right-hand corner, and we hope you'll do just that. And another quick reminder, we have a great app now. There's an app for that, and if you're in radio and don't have an app, you shouldn't be in radio. So we have an app. It's called Igloo Radio. It's for independent radio stations. Again, visit our homepage, click on it, download it free, and there you are. You can listen to all these great shows. So Frank, I said that, I think, without taking a breath, because I want to make it all about you. It's like, okay,
well,
hurry
up. You're conserving.
I know, it's like, hurry up, get on to all these great questions and things that, you know, that really do give me hope. And when I interview young people, I had a guest, I just have to tell you this, I had a 14-year-old girl named Maya Penn, who has her own company, her own website. She's giving to four charities. She makes eco-friendly products, mostly from like repurposed clothing and vintage. And she was as articulate as almost any guest I've ever had. And I kept saying, Maya, you're 14, like for reals? So it's like, that's the kind of thing that gives me hope. Okay. What are your thoughts about what we're doing to address some of the food challenges in climate change? What's happening?
Well, a lot is happening, and some of it is very encouraging. Some of it is also very daunting. There are public-private partners. Yes, it's very daunting. I mean, we have 7-plus billion people on the planet now, 7.4, something like that, and about 880 million of them are food insecure. We're heading to 9 billion people by the middle of the century. And we, just to sort of keep pace with things, are going to need, 70% more food, 40% more water, and probably roughly twice as much energy to feed that new 2 billion and the rising larger middle class globally that we're seeing, especially in places like China and India and countries that are finally getting a pass at the middle class life, abundant life that we've enjoyed here in this country for a very long time. So the challenge is immense. What's happening? Well, there are these public-private partnerships, government, NGOs, corporations, and individuals who are working in various places in very inspiring ways. I work very closely with Rick Leach, the World Food Program U.S., and they have a program in Guatemala, for example, that has great promise that they've been working on. It's been around for a while, but they've really thrown extra commitment at it, and they've gotten sign-in from top people at the government called the First 1,000 Days in its effort to get child nutrition going in those first 1,000 days, where when children don't have, nutritional food, they have serious developmental issues, stunting and the rest.
Learning issues forever.
Absolutely. There are phenomenal, I sent a group of students last year to Africa. They went to Tanzania, Zanzibar, and Kenya. And what they saw in Tanzania and Zanzibar in particular were quite striking. But, for example, drip irrigation. Now, drip irrigation is something that, you would almost think, well, you're not going to call drip irrigation an innovation, are you? Well, actually, in some of these places, it's a gigantic innovation.
Huge.
Because they've either flooded the field. What's that?
Huge innovation.
Huge.
Yes,
right.
Sorry.
Because up till now, they've flooded the fields or they've sprayed the water in places where it evaporates in the air. Drip irrigation can take that drop of water and put it right on the root of the plant. And that plant then is much more resilient and strong and productive, and you haven't wasted huge amounts of water. So I think, the big one, of course, is, and this is the third rail, which is GMO, biotechnology. But biotechnology allows us as a species to grow food in drought or dry or especially hot areas where these things wouldn't grow before. It allows us to put nutrition into things like sorghum.
Right.
Which is widely consumed in Africa by children, but has by itself virtually no nutritional value. It would be like eating celery and thinking that you're going to build a strong body, bones, and brain. So there are a whole range of things that can be done and are being done, but it's taking them to scale that's the challenge.
And that's
part of what we're looking at.
With the GMO conversation, I asked you off air if you knew my friend Jim Gentile. He was the head of the Research Corporation for Science Advancement here, and now he has gone to be the dean of a college back east, Hope College. But he was on my show a long time ago and really was able to articulate, this is the vernacular, the civilian way of doing it. There's the good GMO and the bad GMO. And what we're looking for and what you're talking about is the GMO that will feed the hungry, not the GMO that's going to compromise the water and the streams and the, GMO Roundup Ready. Is that, we don't have to have a conversation about the GMO good versus bad, but it is a hot button for people in the sustainability world.
Yes, yes. It's a hot button issue for people in the sustainability world, and it's a very challenging and confusing issue for young people and for people generally. I was just in Europe, and Europe has a ban on GMO.
Right, right.
But Europe isn't facing food insecurity, so they've got the luxury of being able to do that. But I put it in moral terms to some of the young people who don't know much about it. And they say, well, we should just ban GMO. And I say, okay, fine. Let's say you can ban GMO because you think that's a bad thing. There's no science that shows that it presents a danger to us. There's no science that indicates that it's a threat. But let's put this in moral terms. You have the tools to save children's lives by growing nutritious food in places that are dry. And you choose not to do that. Does that change the conversation?
Yeah, it really
does.
Starving children.
I mean, it does. I'm not trying to blame people, because I think the GMO debate is healthy and necessary. And I think we need to understand what GMO is and what it affects and what it doesn't. About 88% of the corn that we consume in the United States of America, that we grow, is GMO corn.
Right.
So far, I'm not growing corn cobs out my ears. Now, my great-grandchildren may, but I doubt it. But
Let us hope not.
But this is the debate, and I as a journalist, feel compelled to join that debate. And we need smart people on both sides of the debate. We can't spin it or bury it or pretend it's not there. But nor should we dismiss it by some kind of ideological opposition to something that we don't understand. And I promise you that since most people don't understand how a hybrid tulip comes around, that most people would understand how genetic alterations or biotechnology can change a plant or strengthen a plant, and what that means for us down the line.
And you're right. The debate is going to continue, and I just think having it be as transparent as possible and convincing people like me that have different experts on the show, and then I end up getting off the show and saying, oh, well, I've got it clear now. I feel strongly both ways. It's like it's your brain,
yeah, I mean,
your brain
I,
gets
I was
muddled.
I was just in Europe where they don't have this, and I had a wonderful time speaking about food, going to these fresh markets, meeting the farmers, eating the food, the food from the ground. I've always grown fruit and vegetables. My mother grew fruit and vegetables. So I love watching things grow and picking garden and my strawberries or my raspberries or my tomatoes or my lettuce, right? That's just what I think we should all do that. We should all do that. Not that we can, but we should. So it was magic.
It was
being in Europe,
yeah,
and having this wonderful organic food.
Yeah,
right.
And it's delicious.
But we need all of it. We also need the 8,000-acre farm, because we got 7 billion people to feed. I do not think it's possible with organics and smallholders alone to think that we're going to be able to feed this kind of population with these kinds of conditions.
You know, since you are, and I really agree with you, the innovations and solutions need to be coming rapidly. And I agree with you, they're there. That's where there's so much a spotlight on the Southwest now on what's going on here, because we have severe drought conditions and we have people like Gary Nabhan who, you know, that's what his life's work has been, how to grow food under the most severe minimal water. So let me ask you this. When you talk with, you know, the innovators and the creators, and you are a thought leader, clearly, what do you think is going to hit here first? Bring it on home to the United States. I mean, New York, I've gone to the Food Tank Think Tank, some of their events, and listen to unbelievably great speakers. When is it going to hit home? I think people are waking up a little bit at a time, but the matrix has not been activated. Is it going to take like a New York City not having food for 3 days, or where do you think it's going to hit us? Because that's what it's going to take for Americans to pay more attention, if you ask me.
Well, I think this is what makes this such a challenging issue, because I'm not sure that I can envision something that just clearly makes it hit home. Our agriculture is too widespread.
Yeah.
It's too abundant. So our citrus crop gets slammed in Florida and the price goes up in the supermarket, but you still see orange juice out there. And if the orange juice isn't around, you drink grapefruit juice. And if the grapefruit juice isn't around, you drink
V8. True.
Wow, I could have had a V8. You know, so it's not like,
I remember that.
Yeah. It's not like we're confronted with starvation or anything dire, which is generally what it takes to focus attention. But even then, I mean, think of Hurricane Katrina. It wasn't that many years ago. You know, things fall off the radar screen if they aren't sustained in their urgency. So I think rather than a single galvanizing event, what we really need is an ongoing conversation like we're having here. People are open to that when it comes to food. Look at all the foodie shows on TV now. Look
true.
At all the chef competitions.
Absolutely true.
So I think we can engage it through health, through how food is grown, through what really tastes good and is cool.
Right.
I think we can simultaneously marry it to a conversation about what is happening out there. And though we're pretty insular people here in these United States, I do think we have a gigantic global consciousness. And when we talk about people who are starving or near starving around the world, many, many, many people, most people, I believe, pay attention to that. And I think we can tie these things together. But I wish I could tell you that I think there's some kind of magic moment or thing that's going to happen, and we're all going to wake up and say, here are the three things we need to do. The problem is more subtle and complex than
right.
that.
Right. And you have, like you say, the vastness of it. It's pretty overwhelming at times. Well, when you have, I love to go to summits and conferences and think tanks. When you have something as massive as Feeding the Planet Summit, what kinds of things do you hope to come out of it? I feel as though there's added value to people just engaging in the conversation. But when you convene these very big conversations, what are some of the things that it's always your hope that will result, other than, you know, maybe some great relations? Cross-pollination of ideas, what do you always hope for?
Well, all of the above, and I would come back to a word you used, which is on your website, because I did my homework, you see. Which
is, thank you.
Part of your purpose, which is engagement.
Yeah.
How do we get people to engage? Now, what I want to do is I want to excite them to engage. I don't want to scare them to engage. I want to excite them. I'm saying to these young people, look, when there are 9 billion people on the planet and we need to do things differently, a whole bunch of you are going to get rich figuring out how to do it.
Right.
So who's the first one to, grab the brass ring? Now, that can be your motivation, or just doing a great thing, or saving the planet. I don't care what it is, but put it in a positive framework. So one of the first things I want to do is, with all who interact there, I would like to inspire them. And I would like to inspire them, whether it's studying science and math and going into the front lines of discovery,
right,
or merely embracing innovation, or if they become the rich venture capitalists or the guys up on, and women we'd like more of, on Wall Street,
right,
that they're investing in these great ideas. So that's the first thing. But you're right. It's networking and sharing information. But it's also about engaging and taking action. So what we do at Planet Forward is we say, we want to engage new voices, whether they're young people or farmers or people who are not traditionally at the microphone or in front of the camera.
And or the young at heart that really, and people that bring the wisdom. That's one of the things I liked about when I did my homework. You're bringing people that have a lot of wisdom and knowledge. And when you mix that with the creative, innovative sparks of a young mind, I would imagine great solutions happen. It's the way it works.
Yeah, exactly. And bringing together unlikely travelers. So here I am at the George Washington University, Washington, D.C. Most of the students here come from the suburbs of the city. We brought a farmer into one of our salons. He's got an 8,000-acre spread, and he's very reliant. He uses precision farming. He starts describing what precision farming is, and it's all this high-technology stuff. And these students, their mouths were dropping because they thought farmers were still in overalls and, a pitchfork.
Oh, my God, I love it.
And instead, the guy is talking about how he's doing crossword puzzles sitting in his cab, and he can plow a field or put down fertilizer using GPS and no hands on the steering wheel with 2-inch accuracy.
You are kidding me. I want to know. I want to have him on my show. It's like this is one show leads to another, which leads to another. Oh my God!
Right, right. It's great stuff. And we're going to do with one of our corporate partners. We're going to make available to our students internships on farms and traveling around the world, so that they can see. We're trying to create Planet Forward Explorers. And if any of your listeners or you want to be a Planet Forward Explorer, this goes out to people who are studying abroad or working abroad anyway. They're doing the work anyway. Let's turn you into a storyteller so you can tell the story of what you're doing and seeing. And you can inform and inspire and, yes, engage others as a result. May I tell you one quick story?
Oh, I love it. Yes.
Okay. So we sent some students, as I mentioned, to Kenya. And they went to Nairobi. And they visited this woman by the name of Mary Jinga. Mary is Kenyan, and she's a PhD in environmental science, I think it is, or something. And she's working with women in Kibera, which is the biggest slum in Nairobi. And she started essentially a business with women, and they are making biofuel briquettes, biomass biofuel briquettes, to replace the wood in indoor wood-burning cook stoves. the wood that's burned inside that kills hundreds of thousands in Africa and millions around the world through smoke inhalation.
Every year, it's one of the leading causes of death. I just read that yesterday. I'm not making that up.
See? Okay, now imagine this. So my students discover Mary, and Mary is magic. She is magic. She's smart. She's starting a business. She's solving a problem. And these biomass briquettes, these biofuel briquettes, can be made from corn husks, rice husks, coconut shells, so they can be adapted to the different regions.
So when we come back, we have to take a break. It's a hard break, and I can't do it. But no,
I'll finish the story.
We will have everybody hanging on your every word. Just stay here with us, and we'll come back and hear more about Mary. Please stay here with me.
Join us for a new Mrs. Green's World episode every Saturday at 12 noon Arizona time at MrsGreensWorld.com. All of our past shows are available as on-demand podcasts at MrsGreensWorld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. Mrs. Green's World is a proud member of the Dream Vision 7 and Glimmerglass Radio Networks. If you have questions about the show, write to us at info@MrsGreensWorld.com. We'd love to hear from you. More Mrs. Green's World next.
Hi there, this is Mrs. Green with some pretty impressive news about the VW Jetta TDI. It's got a turbocharged clean diesel engine, it's 90% cleaner than previous diesel engines, it gets 609 miles on one tank of gas, more than the Prius. That's from Tucson, Arizona to San Diego and halfway back. And it's got an amazing 6-speed Tiptronic transmission. See Chapman VW today for a very special offer on the 2014 Jetta TDI or visit ChapmanTucson.com.
Shop the Habit Store first for your home improvement needs, appliances, and furnishings. We have daily specials, weekly red tag sales, and occasional store-wide clearance events. Join our loyalty program and keep up with the special offers through Facebook, Twitter, and our monthly newsletter. Your good deals means Habitat Tucson can build and renovate more homes for hardworking people. The Habit Store hours are Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, Saturday, 8 to 4, and you'll find us on Grant Road, just east of I-10 in Tucson, Arizona.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. Our thought-leading, passionate thinker and guest with us today is Frank Sesno. Frank is the director of the George Washington School of Media and Public Affairs and the creator and host of Planet Forward. And Frank, I'm not going to read all those other long accolades about you because I want you to keep telling us about Mary, who's making briquettes, biomass briquettes.
Mary Jenga, biofuel biomass briquettes in Kenya. And my students went and they saw her and they shot a video of her. And they brought the video back and I saw it. And I beat them up a little bit because I said, we can do better with your video. We're going to edit a little bit differently to make it even more brilliant. And it was. And then I said, you know, we've got a food summit. We've got a Feeding the Planet summit coming up. I want to bring Mary from Kenya present to that group. So we did. We brought Mary from Kenya. My students were in the audience. The audience was filled with 400 people, CEOs, NGOs, congressional staffers, academics, farmers, and we played the video that the students had shot of Mary, and then Mary came out on stage, and she addressed these people.
And I would have cried. Well,
it gets better, because Mary then visited my class, the next day. And she sat and she told them the story about why she got into this briquette business. As a little girl, it was her job to go and get the wood for the wood-burning cook stove for her mother. And she did it from the time she was a little girl. And as she grew into her adolescence, she realized she was walking farther and farther to get the wood because the forests were being systematically cut down and wiped out. And she realized that as a woman, since it's always the women who do this, she was spending an inordinate amount of time getting fuel. The fuel was poisoning people in these homes, and she dedicated herself to fixing the problem. Well, my students were in tears.
Oh, I bet.
And they volunteered to start an independent campaign for her. Two of them wanted to go. I don't know if they've done it because they hadn't raised enough money, an intern with her this summer. But the point was she informed and motivated young people to think about something they'd never thought about before. And then try to do something about it.
I
And, you know, that story to me, I've been in Rotary for 22 years, and that to me is how we really do build international peace and understanding. It starts with a briquette. And
it
your
student,
it does. It really does. It's you know, putting in a well. It starts to change the, you know, maybe shift the planet to a safe and just place for all of us. And I want to be able to die with the hope that that will change, or that I will have seen a lot of it. So it's like, and
well, you know,
I got a long
the other
time.
The other thing that's so interesting about this too is that we talk a lot about international study and study abroad and how it's globalized. But you know, at the end of the day, you know what it took? It took this woman sitting in with my students, just being there,
yeah,
and talking about going to the woods every day and trying to, you know, get fuel when she was a child, just telling her own story. It wasn't very complicated. And now these students were sensitized to something they'd never thought about before. And they didn't have to travel halfway around the world to experience some profound moment, you know. It was just meeting, learning from, being in contact with another human being who was very, very effective at telling her story.
Yeah, making it real. You made it real. And I want to tell everybody that you can see that video at planetforward.org. If you put it in the search bar, I always have my computer close and you can see the video. And of course, as soon as I'm off the show, I'm going to watch the video because I didn't get a chance to do all of that. But it's those stories that to me indeed will change the world. I'd like to, if we can, unless if you want to share another story, it's you can tell by the way the show goes, it's up to you and me. So is there any another story you want to share? Can we talk about media a little bit?
Oh, let's talk about media. Everybody likes to talk about media.
And my...
Especially me.
Boy, and especially me. And I really, I love to make people laugh because I started this 6 years ago. My background was in health and human services. And it was one of those, you know, years in the corporate world. And at 57, I said, you know what? I want to make a different kind of difference. I want to help preserve the planet. People thought I was crazy. I am crazy. And started, you know, this little show called Mrs. Green Goes Mainstream on a Clear Channel affiliate. And now it's a company with, you know, seven staff and an international presence, not a huge one, and a network of people growing. And what I say all the time is, why isn't there an Oprah of green? That's what I want to be. And people laugh. And I say, laugh, laugh, laugh. But where is the integrated plan for mainstream media coverage on climate change and the challenges that we face? Where is it, Frank? I'm asking you. And what are you going to do about it?
There isn't one. And I think, what am I going to do about it?
Well,
thanks.
That was the trick, like, just throw that in.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate that. There isn't one, and it's one of the reasons why I'm using a university as a platform for this, because
right,
students get it, and they know it's about their world, because universities are communities of researchers and learning, because they have a clear and credible platform, because they are about improving the world through the research that we do and apply, and because these are institutions that are uniquely dedicated to the future. I don't think most media companies fit that profile. They're not thinking about the future. They're thinking about the present. They're not thinking about solving problems. Most of them are thinking about circulation and ratings. Where they're thinking about news, unfortunately, because that connects with circulation and ratings in too many cases, they're thinking about things that go boom in the night or the day, rather than things that are long-term, complex challenges. Now, I don't take away anything from the urgency of the news.
Right.
What's happening in Gaza and the Middle East,
right,
and Ukraine and Russia, these are huge stories. And they show how hard it is to have sustained coverage on something like climate change, energy, food, that is not urgent, isn't exploding, is very much a threat, but is incremental. And that's why I think we need a special and a very creative, engaging way to come at this. I don't think we're going to get but kind of reactive storytelling in most cases, not all, but in most cases, from mainstream media on this topic.
And to your point, in terms of being forward thinking, forward planning, forward anything, there will be wars fought and are already over water. You know that. Water rights are probably among the most severe or in the highest priority for me right now. It goes along with food scarcity and on and on and on. But, you know, what are all the, we make a joke sometime on our team, what are all the rich people doing? Well, they're buying up water rights. The companies are buying up water rights because, why? Because there's going to be a scarcity. So to me, and I have this question that is not funny, and I really meant it and thought about it in prepping for the show. Is your vision to be a significant part of helping to be the solution to fill this obvious gap? Is that one of the dreams for Planet Forward, to help this emerge by connecting even with people like me? I mean, I will stay connected and help in ways that I can with an international radio show. I mean, I just got an email the other day from someone in Poland and another person in England. So is it your vision to help grow this as a media and social media platform?
Yes, my dream of vision of this is that this is the hub of great ideas and great storytelling. Both. And that people benefit by being engaged, that this becomes both a storytelling collaborative and an engagement hub. And so that we can truly motivate and innovate people, but also provide opportunities. So ideally, we can have winners. What I'd really like is I would like to have a sort of Oscars of innovation.
Right. Oh, my gosh.
That springs from Planet Forward. And there are categories. You can be the most, you know, it can be in food, it can be in energy, it can be small company, it can be large corporation, it can be undergraduate or graduate or high school or middle school. We're going to be doing something to feature middle schoolers, I think, who are going to have a video contest about solar on the Planet Forward platform, planetforward.org, and we can have people vote and we can generate excitement. That's what I think we need to do. When I talk about storytelling in a different way to engage people on this topic, I don't even want to use the word sustainability. It's not about sustainability. It's about invention. You know, Henry Ford invented the mass assembly line so everybody could have a car. Thomas Edison invented light bulbs. People weren't sitting around talking about the science or anything. They were talking about the car they could drive or the light that would shine. I think that's how we change this conversation.
I think it's a way to change the conversation. And also, I think it's important to get the word out about important issues, but it is equally important for all of us working to do that to make sure we know what we're talking about, or just pose the question. And I'm guilty of that. I get very radical about some ideas. I just met with my book publisher, and he said, Gina, you make some really bold claims in that book of yours, and you need more citations because you're gonna light a few fires. Like, what gives her the right to say that? So I'm going to be doing citation finding this weekend.
Right. Well, we have to know what we're talking about, and we have to approach this a certain way. It's why I approach it journalistically, because what I would never say something on television as a reporter if I can't attribute it to somebody credible or to a source that's provable. Preferably original source material. I have a whole thing I do with my students. Where is your information coming from? Is it reliable? Does the source have an agenda? How do you explain that to a broader public so you can still share that information with them? We need to be informed. Thomas Jefferson talked about this. If we're going to be free and self-governing, we need to know what we're talking about. One of my other concerns about the media is it's increasingly a noise machine. It's assertion-based.
Squawk box.
Not fact-based.
Right. Oh, my God. Yes.
And so if we're going to, do we really want to spend a lot of time debating whether climate change is happening? Or can we present the science and present what we know so that people understand it, and most already do, at least enough to accept that it's happening, and then go from there? What really is at stake in Keystone? Will the Canadians stop making synthetic crude if we don't build Keystone? I mean, know your facts before you form your opinion.
Right. And I'm telling you, it's for me, as someone, like I said, has a background in social services, very different. I've had to learn the hard way only a couple of times, though. And then when people have called me out on Twitter or written me nasty grams, I get them on the show. And I say, I am not a scientist. I am not an environmental reporter. I'm a radio talk show host that asks people to think and doesn't tell them what to. So what is your thought? I mean, I've had the, you know, the big ag farmers and Whole Foods and Chipotle. And then I have some of the people that represent the farmers, the small farmers in upper New York State. And I'm telling you, this woman who's an attorney, she's watching what I'm doing and she's getting to me if I didn't do enough research, which isn't always easy. I don't want to get caught.
This is one of the things I'm trying to accomplish with Planet Forward, and I would invite any of your listeners to take advantage of what I'm about to say. The purpose here is to tell the story from the bottom up, not the top down.
Okay.
So who could talk about farming or climate impact on a farm or what's happening with the seed or the water or anything else more compellingly than a farmer?
Totally.
How often do we hear them telling us the story? Who will tell the story of these tidal these tidal turbines better than the engineer who's developed it? Now, we say, for people who are going to post videos or blogs or anything, we want them to be informational, not promotional. I'm not looking to be a yellow pages of everybody's great idea. But explain how something works and tell a good story around it. So I think that one way to deal with this is to, and again, this is why I focus on the innovation, because by definition, it's something that's already happening but hasn't caught on yet. By definition, it's new, and that's what's interesting and exciting. So I'm hoping that one way we come at this, and these are the tools of new media, is that we empower people to tell exciting, interesting, informative stories in their own right.
And it just,
New York Times reporter to show up.
With no spin. I had this woman named Robin O'Brien on my show recently, and she was very hesitant to answer some questions. And I said, you know, Robin, I own my own studio, so it's like, what do you want to say? It's okay. And she talked about being on some of the mainstream shows and having their set of lawyers and one lawyer for her. And even though they were supporting, she was outing some of the things in the food industry for advertising and on and on. And she said, you know, I was told what I could say and what I couldn't. And you know what, Frank? I get it. It's not my first rodeo. If GM is one of your biggest sponsors, you can't get out there and bash them on TV, but you can still find ways to get the message out. So one of the things I love about my show is that, yeah, say it, because I don't have that sponsorship. We're working on a very different model. So I love that you felt comfortable to say anything that you want to say, and I love to entertain the other part of the ideas. So what is your next event, and how do people connect with you, people that listen to the show? I've got a really small, growing, solid tribe, as Seth Godin would say, of people that, you know, listen to my shows weekly and stay in touch and subscribe to my newsletter. What's the best way for them to find out more about you?
Well, the best way for them to find out more about us is to go to planetforward.org, and they can poke around the site and look at some of the ideas that people have put up. We have over 3,000 videos in a variety of different topic areas.
It's a great website. It is a great
architecture.
Website.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
Really,
you know,
a great website.
If I had another $100,000, I'd make it even greater, but you know.
I know. If I had $10,000, I'd make mine even greater. But having videos are really just very helpful. People love that.
That's the GMO tree I'm trying to figure out how to do is the one that grows money, but I'm not there yet.
And if you do, can I be the first one you call?
Absolutely.
I'll give you my cell phone.
Okay. We'll share it. But anyway. So, yeah, we've got 3,000 videos, poke around, and I'd very much invite people to upload their idea, which they can do in a simple cell phone video, which they talk to cell phone, or a more produced video if they're interested and capable of that, or write a blog or post pictures, but be part of that conversation. And if they've got any questions, you know, get in touch with us. All the information is on the site at planetforward.org.
I would describe the website as vibrant, and that's really, it's very alive. And, you know, I work closely with students at the University of Arizona. I just got put on the President's Advisory Council on Environmental Sustainability, and we'll be working with students, and I'll tell them. I mean, I'll spread the word, because the University of Arizona is not one of the schools that are on the team right now.
Well, so, the University of Arizona is one of our consortium schools, and we're very excited about that. So they will be attending our summit in Washington. They'll be sending students to our summit. Jim Beiser, whom you mentioned, who was a guest on your program, who's there himself and brilliant as a scientist and on the subject of climate change,
is
on our advisory board.
And he's fun. We're connected.
Yeah, absolutely. And I hope that we can, you and I can talk about how we can do things together and help to, you know, to spread the word, spread the story, and get great ideas, you know, in the mainstream.
I guarantee you we'll make that happen. Kelly will be like the pit bull on it. Okay, next week it's all about waste. Our guest will be Alex Fried, founder and director of Post Landfill Action Network. He's got a plan, and it's about waste, and we want to hear it. Frank, thank you so much. Everybody, make it a great green week, and thanks for being a part of Mrs. Green's World.